sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her. I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone, and happy Friday, Junior, to all of you. I appreciate you tuning in today and every weekday at 12 o'clock to The Grace Curley Show. We always have a good time, I like to think. Even when Taylor doesn't want to, I insist on it. We're going to have fun today. And today is no exception. There's a lot to keep up with Operation Epic Fury. But before we get into that, and the latest, I don't want to call it fake news, but I think other people might, regarding Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, the former weekend host, weekend morning host of Fox and Friends. We'll talk about that. I wanted to start, though, Taylor, with the Tallarico of it all. Because yesterday, I was more focused on Jasmine Crockett, the congresswoman who is soon going to be out of a job, who was running against Tallarico in this Democrat primary and was blaming her loss on all of us. Because how progressive is it? You lose, and it's even when you lose to another Democrat, it's somehow our fault. What can't we do? We used to say that about Trump, like everybody's always blaming me for everything. But we are also part of that. We get blamed for every problem there is. And now I have more sound of Jasmine Crockett, finally, because she kind of had a cop-out there, Taylor, the night before, where she didn't give a concession speech and she said, we're still waiting on some numbers. It was very clear at that point that she wasn't going to win. But rather than hang around and give a concession speech, she said, we're not going to know the numbers, so I'm just going to go home and I'm going to leave you here, which is a very strange move. I've never been to any of these parties where you like watch parties. I actually went to one in 2020 with Donald Trump. And I wasn't the candidate, so I did leave. But I can't imagine hosting. It's like anything else. You're hosting the party. You're kind of supposed to hang around for a bit. But now we have her concession speech, and I want to play a little bit of this for
you. I told you the story about the birthday party for like a 90-year-old lady I went to that died on the way there? Because that's basically what this. You just sit. You get the news that that person is gone. We still got to eat here. We got all this food. That's Jasmine Crockett. She was the corpse that left.
I'm sorry. I'm going to need you to slow down for me here. You were...
I've never told you this story.
No, you were getting ready for a gig, I presume?
No, not a gig. This was when I was a kid. It was no... We were at.
I thought you were singing. You were getting your secret blazer on.
The whole
family. I'm gonna knock the socks off this
extended
lady.
Extended family. Everybody had gathered for this woman's 90th or 95th birthday party. Old Portuguese lady. And
do you know, was she related to you?
Yes, she was related to me somehow. Very excited. Okay. I don't remember who she was, but
You got the invite.
We got the invite. She failed the show, and they went to pick her up, and she. She was dead at home. It was awful. But we're left sitting there looking at each other. We're all there, and there's the food. We have to...
No, exactly.
It turned into, like, a repast. Like,
yeah, right, from birthday to bereavement style thing.
Right. That's exactly what Jasmine Crockett forced them to do.
Yeah, party on without me. That's really dark, Taylor. You know, every time you tell a story from your childhood, another piece of the puzzle...
Yes.
Falls into place. Yeah. I just picture you in like a fedora. Well, at like 7 years old, well, I'm going to dive into this food. I don't know about the rest of you.
You know, this reminds me of a song.
You're like, do they have a live mic here? I'd like to try to raise the spirits
Lift
of everyone.
The spirits, yes.
Wowzers. That's crazy. So here's Jasmine Crockett anyway. Doing her best to Carry on. This is cut 13.
No one. I gotta get through this. 6 years ago, no one believed that I could become a state representative.
Why was she standing in front of the hot dog tray at a 7-Eleven while making this speech?
I didn't understand where this was. I didn't understand anything about it. I will say this, though. Whenever you're giving a speech and you crack, you start to cry, it's really hard after that to rein it back in. Once that breaks, Taylor, for most people, it's over. Unless you take a minute and you really compose yourself.
Well, that's why
get that quiver lip, it's done.
That's why I've beaten all emotion out of myself, so...
Yeah, no, this
public
is
speaking.
All making sense. But anyway, now the new hero of the Democrat Party is the guy who colluded with Stephen Colbert against Jasmine Crockett, and that would be James Tallarico. But did you see what happened yesterday, Taylor, right after he won?
Well, I've noticed, I don't know what happened, what you're referencing, but I've noticed, like, all the weird stuff about him is now coming out.
Yeah, and there's been weird stuff that I've seen before, him saying he wants to put, like, a welcome mat on the southern border, and Joe Biden somewhere saying, hey, I already did that, and him on...
Bienvenidos hat, Matt, what are we doing?
It says, don't just keep the faith when you get here, spread it, it everywhere.
Bring the Cheetos, yeah, that's it, Jack.
But there's also James Tallarico with Joe Rogan explaining how God really was in support of abortions. There's a lot of weird stuff. And I've figured out that he sounds a lot like Gabe from The Office. I don't know if anyone out there watches The Office as much as I do, but that is exactly what he sounds like. But
Shut up about the sun!
He's like a less charismatic Pete Buttigieg. And
I know how to use chopsticks so well.
And... he's the new hero. He's the one that the Democrats chose, and, you know, he's the one you chose, and now you got to dance with him. You brought him to the party, you got to dance with the one you brought. You know, that's how it works. But it's not just, I've seen those videos before, Taylor, and I think that the Democrats were okay with those videos because they were like, we're just going to persevere. He's still a better bet than Jasmine Crockett. But then yesterday, some tweets started coming out from his COVID days. And COVID was peak wokeness. COVID was really a time that got a lot of people crazy. And it's a time that a lot of these politicians wish they could delete in their social media. But the internet, as so many politicians have learned, the internet is forever. And I want to read you just a couple of these, okay?
These are James Tallarico's tweets?
From May of 2020. And you'll understand. You'll read
prime
it.
Prime time, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you'll be like, this sounds like 2020. And my God, am I so glad that time period is over. But this is what the Democrats do. You know, like, they made a living. They made their bones digging up people's old tweets. It's ironic that very thing will be, in a lot of these cases, the thing that takes them down. So he said, white skin. This is James Tallarico running in Texas now. White skin gives me and every white American immunity from the virus, but we spread it wherever we go, through our words, our actions, and our systems. We don't have to be showing symptoms like a white hood or a Confederate flag to be contagious. The only cure is diagnosing the virus within ourselves and taking dramatic actions to contain the spread. The first
Songs of Hate, written by the White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan?
The first small step is proclaiming loudly and unequivocally that hashtag Black Lives Matter. So that's the guy they have running in Texas. And even John Heilman.
I get what he was trying to say, but you can find less weird ways of saying it. You can just say it.
He's a weird guy, though. That's what I'm gathering here. He likes
to... terrific hugger. I've been with a bunch of girls where that's basically all they want to do.
He likes to present things in this kind of strange way. And I want to play John Heilman because he was on MS Now. I see, you know, Taylor, it's MSNBC and now it's MS Now, but I don't like to just say MS Now. I like to say MS Now. So you got to do it. MS Now. So this is John Heilman on James Tallarico. This guy that with Stephen Colbert and the rest of the Democrats and all the fundraising, they just crowned this guy the Prince of Texas. And you've got Beto O'Rourke saying he's so full of charisma, he's going to be the next, like, JFK. And the funny part about that is that everyone was saying that about Beto, and Beto ended up being a complete non-event. But now he's saying it about Tallarico. If I were Tallarico, I'd be like, I don't like that. I don't like that this guy who ended up being a loser's loser is heaping praise on me. But it makes sense. They both are kind of this cut from the same cloth, like the white Oxford, the very awkward way of speaking, the gesticulation that's very Gavin Newsom-esque, the Vogue covers. Like, it's all, this is like a group of guys, they all do the same thing. And this is John Heilman on James Tallarico. This is cut 12.
But look, I think, Joe, the key thing here is that James Tallarico was cast, and still is cast, as a moderate. There is nothing, he's not a moderate. He and Jasmine Crockett have basically the same positions on almost every issue. He's a populist. He's a progressive. He's pretty far to the left on a lot of issues, but mostly he's an outsider. And you could see that in the results on Tuesday, where he basically carried all of the counties that Bernie Sanders carried in the 2020 primary against Joe Biden. It was not a thing that people that you associate with being a moderate.
Yeah, but that's not what you're supposed to say, John. You're supposed to be on board with this. This is the only way that Democrats have a shot at any of these races, especially in a place like Texas, is trying to convince people that everything they've ever said is not how they actually feel. And Kamala Harris, that was her playbook too. Every single quote, every single policy she stood behind, every single interview she did when she was running for president, she was trying to run away from every single thing she'd ever done. And that's pathetic, in my opinion. It's like, and I said this yesterday, run, if you're going to run, do it with your full chest. Like, if you're going to run, if you're a nut, and this goes against what Obama's been telling these progressives for years, like, it's okay to be crazy, but let's not say it out loud so much. Let's be crazy after we win. Let's tell all the white folks in Texas that we're moderates and that we don't hate their guts. And then once we get in, we can really drive home.
For me, prophetic voices like Jesus have helped me reckon with my own whiteness, my own masculinity, my own...
Doesn't he sound like Abe, though? I think that was
Sometimes
a good call on my part.
Sometimes I wonder if I have ovaries in my scrotum.
I really do think that was a good call. One other thing before we go to break, Taylor, and we can talk about this. We can talk about... Actually, let's play Beto's take on Tallarico. This is cut 9.
I've never been more excited. I mean, let's start with James Tallarico. This is one of, if not the most talented politicians I have ever seen. Those of us who have watched his career in the Texas House have known that he's incredibly talented, but for the rest of the nation, they got to see him in the closing months in the most important election of our lifetimes. When James Tallarico wins in November, he will be the 51st vote in the U.S. Senate. Texas will save the country.
It's so crazy to hear from Beto about this story that's going to be exactly like his and hopefully have the exact same ending where it ends in complete failure. But it's weird, isn't it? That it's like he's talking about the ghost of Beto past. He's talking about, he has to be looking at this young guy and thinking, if he's able to do it and I wasn't, that's such a bummer for me.
I've never been more excited.
Yeah, oh, you really sound it. And the most talented politician, I keep hearing about all these guys like Pete Buttigieg, James Tallarico, Beto O'Rourke. They're all the most talented politicians, and yet they poll for absolute crap. Nobody seems to like them. Is that not part of being a talented? Like, you can say what you want about Bill Clinton or whatever, but there was a time where people really found Bill Clinton charismatic. And now, maybe not so much, but they had that going in. I don't see it with these Democrat progressive kind of hall monitors. I just don't see the it factor. You know, speaking of Bill, Taylor, I saw the funniest thing yesterday. It was on Instagram. And it was this girl, she made a TikTok or something, and she said, Bill Clinton looking at the Epstein files. And it was just like a montage of her pointing and laughing and smiling and the song, another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. And she's just like laughing, like she's looking at her high school yearbook. And it's so true.
Hope you had the time I hope you had the time of your life.
He's looking at this thing so nostalgically, like, oh, man, those were the good old days. But, yeah, I don't see it. We'll talk about this more. I want to talk about Pete Buttigieg and Bill Clinton when we come back for a separate reason that has to do with Taylor Cormier, believe it or not. But we will talk to you, and we're going to have a pretty strong debate, I think, about our poll question. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I know how to use chopsticks so well.
Follow Grace on X at @G_Curly. This is the Grace Curly Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curly Show. Let's do the poll question here, because this is going to start, I think, a lot of drama. Today's poll question is brought to you by Colette Tours. Join me October 2nd as we journey to picturesque Tuscany and the Italian Riviera with Colette. Colette handles all the details, flights, meals, hotels, and local experiences. I am so excited for this trip. It is getting me through the cold weather here in New England, just dreaming about it. Your only job with Colette is to have the time of your life. I traveled with them to Iceland, and I had the best time. And I just can't say enough great things about Colette, and I would love to travel with you. So to join me, call Colette at 800-581-8942 or go to gracecurlyshow.com and click the banner to learn more. That number again is 800-581-8942. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is: do you approve of United Airlines' new policy requiring passengers to use headphones while listening to personal devices?
Yes, I do. I think that when people scroll TikTok or Reels without headphones on full blast, it's a real sign that something else is amiss. I think that's the behavior in general of psychopaths, of people who really don't care what anyone thinks of them or about anyone else's peace or personal space. So I don't have an issue with this.
Also, you have no control. I mean, you might have kids around, right? And especially if you're just scrolling blindly, you never know when something's going to come up that's completely inappropriate, depending on your algorithm, like mine.
Yeah, I'm confused that people do this. I've never, because, you know, I understand scrolling and a lot of times they have the closed captions on so you can just see whatever's going on. But you know what it reminds me of? It's like if you sit with someone, remember you were little and you just had to click through the TV to find a channel you wanted? You just had to someone had to just keep clicking through. And every once in a while, you'd be like trying to find something and someone would just be clicking. They just couldn't rest on a channel and it was just boom, 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 boom. It's like that, except you don't have the TV in front of you. Someone puts a bag over your head, and they're just changing the channel every 2 seconds, and it's really a mind bleep. So, yeah, I'm on board with this. Don't do this on airplanes. And I'm saying that I'm probably the lady with the crying baby. So take that with whatever you want to take it with.
Yeah, 99% say
wow.
Yes. Yeah.
99% say
yes. Well, it's rude. I think anybody who does this anywhere should be thrown out of wherever they are,
Jim,
while it is moving. Preferably while it's moving at a high rate of velocity.
You go straight to jail.
You don't need to be on FaceTime. And if you are on FaceTime while you're out and about, you can have headphones in. But there's absolutely no need for you to see another person that's not actually in front of you. And there's no reason they need to see you. Make it a phone call. And I've seen this everywhere. They talk about nothing. It's not important.
No, and also just bring back being bored. Bring back being bored. Oh, and I have another thing on this, Taylor, about why all of us with our heads in our phone, it's not only bad for your brain, but there's another part of it that's bad, and I'm going to explain it when we come back. But I'm glad we're all on the same page for once. How refreshing.
Curly Show is on the air.
All right. I have a couple things on this new United. I don't fly United all that often. I'm like Bernie Sanders. What do you think? I'm gonna be sitting in line on United? Not on my watch.
I'm a JetBlue girl, for better or for worse. But they've got this new rule where if you start playing your reels or your TikToks or, you know, whatever you got on your YouTube shorts, and you don't have headphones on, they can boot you off the plane. I'm sure they would start with, do you mind not doing that, before they give you the heave-ho. But that is now, because of the rewritten rules, they have that capability if they so choose. And there's a few things here, Taylor. One, I agree with you. It's super annoying. The other thing is, and I've been noticing this, is that because everyone needs their phones all the time, it's like you're waiting in line to order a coffee. And I do it too. I'm guilty of it too sometimes. But you're waiting in line to order a coffee. You got your head in your phone. You know, you're waiting at the bank. You got your head in your phone. You're at the grocery store waiting at the checkout. You got your head in your phone. And what happens with that is that we end up missing a lot of what seems like silly interactions that don't really matter that much, but they do matter a lot. And I'll just give you an example. I can't tell you the amount of times I've been going into Dunkin' Donuts with a car seat, with my baby, and there's someone who goes out of their way, usually a mom or a dad, goes out of their way, runs to the door to open the door for me. And then we have a tiny conversation, right? Like, oh, how old is he? Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember those. You know, you need your coffee. Keep it up, whatever. And they feel good. And I'm not saying this like, oh, I'm doing them a favor, but I know it from my own experience of holding the door for someone. They feel good that they just helped out this mom who's trying to get her coffee. I feel good because someone held the door for me. And it's those little interactions that keeps society functioning.
I believe the kids call it raw dogging it.
And now what happens is I'll be struggling to open a door. Wah, poor me. That's not why I'm saying it. But there'll be some kid there, some 17-year-old kid, who's on his phone, who has no idea that I am multiple hands trying to, like, grab the door, whatever. And I'm sure that kid would like to help. But because he's so ensconced in whatever's happening on his little machine, he doesn't realize that there's an opportunity there to do something nice. And again, I will reiterate, this has happened to me too. And yesterday it happened where a guy said to, he was on his phone and he looked up and I had already gone through the door. He said, I'm so sorry, I would have held the door for you. And it's like, that's okay. And no sweat. But it's those little moments that really add a lot. Even if you don't realize it, they add a lot to your daily life. And they make you feel like you're part of something bigger than scrolling on your Doom device. And I think it's important.
I agree. No notes.
Real? Oh.
Yeah.
Let's end the show. Let's end the show right now. Okay, everyone, it's been really fun. Thank you for tuning in.
Watch the show live.
I'm on a high right now. And there was just one other thing I wanted to add in here. When I was getting on a plane recently, I traveled two kids, and I was traveling by myself. And I get to the back of the plane. I do the cheap ticket, so they don't seat me until the very, very, like, they choose my seat for me right when I get there. I'm frugal like that. And so I get to the back of the plane. There's a woman sitting there, Taylor. She's probably 60 years old, right? She's sitting in my seat. And I said, sorry, I think you're in my seat. And she goes, no, I'm 27A. And I said, that's weird. I'm 27A too. So, and then she looks at it. She goes, oh, sorry, hold on. I'm 26A. Now the guy, there's two people in front of that. So that's also not a possibility. And the guy goes, you're not 26A. I'm 26A. And then, now I'm standing there, Taylor. Tons of bags, tons of stuff going on. That's okay. I'm just waiting there patiently. And then she says, oh, sorry, hold on. That's the gate number.
Wait a second.
Oh.
How did she get on that plane?
No, Taylor. She goes, I'm 24B. No urgency here. We've got no urgency happening with this woman. And I'm like, okay, well, glad we settled that. In my head, I'm going, can you move?
Get the bleep out of my seat.
Can you get the bleep out of my seat so I can get these two kids in their seats so we can get moving here? Like, can you? I'm always about, like, I see when people show a little sense of urgency, I take that as a sign of respect. Just respect for one another. You're crossing the street. You put on a little hustle. Pick it up a little bit. You know, you can give me a little wave. I like the wave. But also, if you have the ability, you know, pick up that little pace you're going with, because we're all giving you the, you know, letting you go. But it's like there was just no sense of I'm in the wrong, so let me get a move on. And I was like, damn, people.
Grace, you're starting to sound a lot like me. This is how I feel all the time about just about everything.
That's my fate in life, Taylor, is that I'm going to become just like my producer. That's what they say. Isn't that the old adage?
You'll start looking like the producer, yes.
Yeah, you all start looking like your producer.
You'll be wearing a Jurassic Park hoodie in no time.
Oh, that! I honestly should get a Jurassic Park hoodie just because of how much I make fun of you for it. All right, so we have a few other things to talk about. I want to get into something to do here with what's going on in Iran, and that has to do with Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, who's now getting a lot of heat for his comments about the fallen troops, these six troops who have died in Iran. And this was the comment. I want to play the original comment. Then we'll play the Caroline and Caitlin Collins. And Caroline and Caitlin Collins have an interesting dynamic because Caitlin Collins, and I didn't talk about this on the show, but she was on a podcast recently and she talked about how when they were in, I think it was Saudi Arabia, the Saudis tried to keep her out of the presser. They didn't like her because she shouted a question because she said they're not used to the way we operate. They didn't like her. And they tried to keep her, specifically Caitlin Collins, out of the presser. And she said, to Caroline Levitt's credit, she talked to some people and she looked at me and she looked at them and she said, no, Caitlin's coming with us. And that's how we should all operate, especially when we're in other countries. It's
Do you know how old Caitlin Collins is? She's 33. I assume she was 40 because she's got that scowl on her face all the time. Really ages you.
Can I say something? I have a friend. I have a friend who was recently in Palm Beach who saw Caitlin Collins at a swanky spot and said she's so gorgeous in person, which I believe, by the way, but said she is really stunning in person. And I know she does have a scowl on quite a bit, but I thought it was nice that she gave Caroline this credit, and I thought it was nice that Caroline did that because that's how we should operate when we're in other places. Is they don't look at us as like Democrat, Republican. They look at us as all Americans, so that's how we should operate. We should be a team when we're over there. And anyway, to now fast forward, but it is clear that they can have that relationship of I'm going to have your back when we go somewhere, but they hate each other. Like, there's a lot of anger between these two. So let's first play Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. This is cut four.
They are terrorists, after all, and they need to target civilians because they can't fight toe-to-toe. But we will find them, and we will kill them. This is what the fake news misses. We've taken control of Iran's airspace and waterways without boots on the ground. We control their fate. But when a few drones get through or tragic things happen, it's front page news. I get it. The press only wants to make the president look bad, but try for once to report the reality. The terms of this war will be set by us at every step.
All right. So that was the comment that has people in the fake news media, people at CNN melting down. So let's play a little bit of this back and forth. I can't play the whole minute 30, Taylor, but let's play a little bit of cut two.
Hegseth was complaining that it was front page news about these six service members who were killed.
That's not what the secretary said, Caitlin, and that's not what the secretary meant, and you know it. You know you are being disingenuous. There is not. We've never had a secretary of defense. Who cares more?
Drones get through or tragic things happen. It's front page news. I get it. The press only wants to make the president look bad. Yeah, we cover the deaths of U.S. service members under every president.
The press does only want to make the president look bad. That's a fact. Especially you. No, listen to me. Especially you and especially CNN. And the Secretary of Defense cares deeply about our war fighters and our men and women in uniform. He travels all across this country to meet with them, to connect with them, and your network has hardly ever probably reported on that. You also had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Chairman Kane, who's a brave patriot, standing alongside the secretary at the Pentagon this morning, again expressing his condolences to these families. And I just told you that the President of the United States will be attending their dignified transfer. So please,
that's not making the president look bad. That's showcasing that.
We expect you to cover that as you should. We expect you to cover that as you should, Caitlin. But you and your network know that you take every single thing this administration says and tries to use it to make the president look bad.
Yeah. Pause it there, because I don't think there's any question of that. When you take the actual cut that Pete Hegseth said, if your takeaway from that is he doesn't think it's important to cover the the death of those troops, or that he somehow doesn't have respect for them, or he's trying to denigrate their service. You did not. You're deranged. You're crazy. Like, look at me in the eyes, as Dave Portnoy said. You've lost it. That is not what he meant at all. And, you know, sure, Michael Singleton, who was on CNN, pointed out that you can take umbrage with the comment if you want to. If you want to misunderstand somebody, you can. If you want to twist somebody's words, you can do it a million times. But Pete Hegseth has served our country. He's done a tour in Afghanistan, a tour in Iraq. He's put on the uniform. He led our troops for about a year as a leader. And there are plenty of service members who have the utmost respect for him. And I think that when you look at how great the military is doing, and I don't just mean in these operations, Taylor, because I have confidence that they would be doing great no matter who the leader was. We just have the best army. We have the best military in the world. But also just recruitment numbers. That's where you really see how these young men and women are feeling about the leadership and feeling about the people in charge. Do they have my back? Do they have, you know, the country's best interest at heart? Is this a leadership team that I feel confident fighting for? And those numbers are amazing. Those numbers are stellar. That's another thing you're never going to hear CNN report. But if you want to try and twist someone's words and make it out like he's somehow trying to denigrate their service or he's mad that it's being covered, you're being incredibly disingenuous. And the other part of this that I find really rich coming from CNN, or coming from the left is probably a better way to put it, is that Joe Biden had one of, if not the most disrespectful showings when he attended the dignified transfer of those 13 U.S. service members, so much so that their family members, those Gold Star families, went on record and spoke openly about how callous and insensitive and inauthentic their interactions with Joe Biden were. This is a guy who, every time Afghanistan, where we lost 13 U.S. service members, it was an abject disaster. Every time it was brought up, Taylor, what did he do? He tried to dismiss it. And not just the U.S. service members, the people flying off the planes and flying onto the tarmac. That was like 4 or 5 days ago. I want to talk about happy things, man. There's a million different quotes. But I think that the most important quotes, the quotes that really can inform exactly how hypocritical this is, are the quotes from those Gold Star families who said that he came up to them. Not only did he check his watch, that was really the headline, right? Checked his watch so many times. As if... Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but like as if he had somewhere really important to be, Taylor. We know that most of his day was spent wandering around, pulling dogs' tails, and taste testing the latest chocolate chip ice cream and the White House freezer. And yeah, yet,
those kids' hairs aren't going to sniff themselves.
In that one moment where they really needed him to just be present, to do what he always does, which is just to stare ahead. You know, to stare ahead and look frozen. That was the one time where this guy got ants in his pants. And he's like, this is really dragging on here. I got to get moving. He checked his watch a million times. And these families talked about how when he approached them, he kept saying, well, Jill and I understand how you feel, because they lost their son, Bo.
I'd forgotten about Bo.
Right? Jill and I understand how you feel. That's something you say to people who are grieving.
Oh, yeah, the black hole in your chest. I remember the whole speech now.
Yeah.
I
felt horrible just like recounting it, because I just thought these families must have wanted to punch him square in the face. But that's what Joe Biden was up to. And now all these people who never really wanted to talk about that, you know, they didn't want to, we don't want to really criticize him. You know, he's doing the best he can. And, you know, it seems unfair. And they ran cover for him. Now, all of a sudden, that comment from Pete Hegseth, not the checking of the watch, not the families coming out and saying, this guy's a jerk. And our kids died. And he has taken no accountability for it. He's given us no answers. The only thing that we can really come up with here is that he wanted a photo shoot for the anniversary of September 11th. And his ego so big that he wanted this to happen, even though every single guideline was suggesting it wasn't going to be able to happen. This guy's a jerk. And we didn't like our interactions with him. We thought he was disrespectful. And that got a fraction of the coverage that this stupid Hegseth story is going to get. And by all accounts, all these families, all these military families, and I'm sure they'll pull up one, but a lot of these families, a lot of these men and women love Pete Hegseth because he served, he understands them, he's a man of the people, he's not a BS artist, he's not woke, He's not trying to tell them that, like, a transgender military is the strongest military because of diversity. He loves this country. He loves these men and women. And I just think this is yet again, it's just the latest, you know, it's the latest attempt to try to tear one of Trump's guys down, and it's not going to work. And you know what the funny thing is remember what they got mad about Taylor with Midnight Hammer? Because they hate Hegseth. I think it's the weekend morning show stuff. If only he had been a weekday morning show host, then he'd be getting a lot more respect. Remember with Midnight Hammer, they got mad because he said the boys in those bombers?
Yeah.
And they were like,
what about the female pilots? Yep.
What about the girls in those bombers? What about the girls?
He's like, well, she's one of the boys.
Yeah.
She's one of the bros.
All the people who are now mad at the USA men's hockey team, that's what they were focused on then.
It's explosions and American eagles and biceps, man, now. Let's go.
Yeah. And so this is the latest. When we come back, Pete Buttigieg has something.
We're talking about him again? We talked about him yesterday.
I know, Taylor, but you'll appreciate why. You'll appreciate why, because this one has to do with you.
What?
See, Taylor, any story, if I say there's a you connection, suddenly you're intrigued, are you not?
I don't want to be intrigued, but I guess I am.
Well, we'll be back. Everyone's going to like this. I've got a story for you.
I've got a story for you.
Ready? Let me tease this. Okay, this is going to be a great tease. When we come back, Bill Clinton, Pete Buttigieg, Taylor Cormier. I'm Grace Curley. This is The Grace Curley Show.
More of The Grace Curley Show up next. This is The Grace Curley Show.
All right, so yesterday I talked about this piece in The Atlantic about Pete Buttigieg. It was just the typical, like, Beto Pete, you know, trying to make these guys into the next JFK and convince you that, ooh, they're real, they're rugged, they're normal, they're relatable, and here's a black and white picture of them in a diner. And I said I didn't read it, but then one little piece of it stuck out to me, so I'm just going to read you a little bit here. For all of Buttigieg's red-blooded Michigander posturing, it is in some sense impossible for any person with the overweening ambition of a presidential candidate to be a normal guy who is authentically interested in Christmas wreaths, deals at the local bakery, and the pleasures of splitting wood for the fire pit. I don't know if that makes a guy normal, but we can save that for later. Right now, he says, I'm in the best of all worlds. I'm well-known enough that I could get into a restaurant at short notice. I'm not too well known to actually be able to sit there and eat. He said that success, meaning even higher office, would entail losing some of the best things about my life, the peace, the time with the kids, the nice meal without judgments from passerbys. If Buttigieg likes the tranquil existence so much, if he really values dad life, then the last thing he should do is what he clearly intends to do, which is blow it all up by running for president. I actually think that any office of the presidency is one you can come back home from eventually, he said. I once went to a restaurant with Bill Clinton, and it was almost impossible to just eat. He had to greet every table. So what it sounds like to me, Taylor, is he's afraid of getting to your level and not having, and you've talked about this before, not being able to walk out of the house and just have a hamburger and have everyone come over to you. And you're saying to them, hey, I'm just trying to be like you for a
day. I can't read either. Yeah, 960 SAT.
960 SAT, and I'm just trying to sit down and dip some fries in ketchup. And the autographs get old. Like, in the beginning, you're so grateful that people are coming over. But after a while, it's like, hey, just trying to have dinner with my family. And that's what Pete Buttigieg is worried about. He's worried about reaching Cormier levels of fame. It's not easy. It's just not easy. We'll be back. We got a lot more in the next hour. Stay with us.